Okay, sure, no worries. Hi, good morning, freedom lovers. How are you all? So we're going to talk about the open source industry and community census today. We're going to give you a sneak peek of the community side of it, because we're doing our official launch a little bit later on. One of the problems that we have in our community. Sorry, I just lost my concentration for a moment there. No, one of the problems we have in our community is that there are certain kinds of perspectives and perceptions of the community that are a little bit inaccurate. The idea that all of us are old bearded hackers, somewhat inaccurate. That we're all poor students. This is actually a photo of Melbourne students protesting against AIPAC. That's right, down with international diplomacy. We must yell at diplomats and government people because that's what we do. It's a good day off school anyway. Because all of us poor students, and you know, by the look of the room, clearly we're all men here. He says, looking at all of the women in the room. The problem is that those perceptions are pretty much always wrong. The way that the community has grown over the last 15 years, they're so out of whack, it's not funny. And we have our own intuitions about the community, who's represented in the community, how big it is, all those sorts of things. And we have lots of anecdotal evidence. But what Pia and I have found as we're working on trying to grow the industry, nourish the community, is that our anecdotal evidence only gets us so far. We have a pretty good feeling for how all of these things work, you know, how many companies there are in the industry, all this kind of stuff. But what we really wanted was some hard numbers to go out so that we can go to government, we can go to business and tell them what's really going on, and then we can measure it over time. So very briefly, this is Pierre and I. The attractive one is clearly Pia. We decided to go independent, have our own company, and the great thing is that we've been able to sort of take risks and do some crazy stuff that we probably wouldn't be able to in any other company, including industry development, nourishing the community, those sorts of things. And we've had some really great supporters of the census, Fujitsu, IBM, NICTA are all our commercial sponsors, and then Linux Australia and Open Source Industry Australia have provided some moral support. So in thanking all of them, of course, we also have to thank all of the businesses and individuals in the community who completed the census, who stood up to be counted, so that we could put all of this together. And at this point, I think I'm going to bring Pia up to start talking about some of the interesting numbers that came out of it. Do you want this or the space bar?
Any chance you could make the
let's turn this down. I don't need to be in the light.
Now you've seen us, you don't need to see us anymore.
No. Okay, so first of all, I'll just say it was quite funny as we were actually doing the census and as we were seeing the numbers come in, because I, of course, am extraordinarily curious, and anything that I can't see, I want to see. So every day I was refreshing and having a look at the numbers and going, well, Jeff, look at this. And every day Jeff would say, no, I want to wait to the end. I don't want to be biased as the numbers come in. So I've had a lot of fun going through and getting into the numbers, particularly after it closed. So out of all of the community responses, and we're only going to be looking at the community responses today, the individuals who responded, who count themselves as part of the community. 91% of them were Australian citizens. The other 9% comprised of either temporary visas or permanent residents and that kind of thing. 7% of the Australian citizens were living overseas, so we also included Aussies living overseas so we can get an idea of what's happening with our skill sets and whether they're leaving and why they're leaving. And of the people that left, that were living overseas, it was really interesting because we looked at why they left Australia to work overseas. And the top reasons were because of better work opportunities or because of specific jobs that they went overseas for. And the countries they were living in were up here, so this obviously doesn't include Australia, but the country that most people went overseas to live in was the United States, followed by the United Kingdom. Interestingly enough, if you have a look at some of these countries, and all of this was going to be available in the report that comes out a little bit later, but the people that went to the United States, the United Kingdom, and New Zealand, and the Netherlands, and Ireland, all of them, their top reason was because of specific job opportunities, better money, better career prospects. The people that went to China...
Because aside from Ireland, I mean, why would you move to any of those places for any other reason than I've got a job now? So,
but... interestingly, China, Thailand, and Spain, their top reason for moving overseas for work, moving overseas were for lifestyle and culture. So it was just an interesting differentiation there. If we go into why did they come back? We asked the question whether they had any plans to come back, and only about 50% said that they did actually have plans to come back to Australia at this point in time. And of the people that said they were coming back, it was mostly for family or for lifestyle and culture. Of the people that said they didn't have plans to come back or weren't coming back, it was mostly because they didn't see the job opportunities in Australia, which is obviously a massive issue. If we're having one of the greatest open source communities in the world and we're losing those people overseas because there's no perception of jobs locally, then that's obviously a huge loss for our community and our country.
Of course, the inference of our question is why would you come back permanently? But there were a few people who put linux.conf.au in why they would come back to Australia. We didn't quite mean why would you come back every single year for the best conference in the world, but hey, it's nice to know.
We asked about people's country of origin, and it turns out that 20% of the people that responded were originally from another country. So of the Australian citizens, a bunch of those were people who have become Australian citizens, which is pretty cool. So we looked at which countries they came from. That 20% of the respondents came from 27 countries, not including Australia. So it's an extremely multicultural variety of countries, and we can see where they come from here. Now, right at the top they mostly come from the UK, then from followed by New Zealand, then followed by China, then Germany. We have a question?
How does this differ from the standard population? Because what's interesting is the differences rather than just, yes, a lot of people come from the UK to Australia.
That's an excellent question. Lucky I researched that one. in terms of total population, it was fascinating because the top four from this census were the UK, as I said, UK, New Zealand, China, then Germany.
Clearly all places that you want to escape from to come to Australia.
It's very rude, isn't he? In terms of total population, the total Australian population, the country of origin, were UK, New Zealand, China, then Italy. Now, none of our people that came from overseas came from Italy, so that was kind of interesting. And in terms of the proportionate amounts, the people coming from the UK in the open source community were slightly less than the general population. People coming from New Zealand were heaps more. How many people here are from New Zealand? You guys are well represented. Well done. In fact, it's probably, once we take this to Australian government, they may want to create a, you know, open source hub, development hub here in the between Australia and New Zealand.
Thank you for choosing the crowded house method. Strengthening Australia at the expense of your mother country.
But Germany was extremely well represented, much better represented than it is in the general population, which was really interesting to see as well. Where possible, what we've tried to do with this, and this will be far more evident in the general report that comes out, we've tried to compare against two things mainly, against the broader ICT industry, so we can get an idea of how strong the open source industry industry is compared to the broader ICT industry, and we're not going through any of that today, but that'll be available in the report. And then we're also comparing our community against the broader Australian population. So we're trying to compare all that kind of stuff so we can get a good idea.
And there's also some specific data that we've gone after. The AGAMO study into government use of open source, things like various ABS studies, things like that, that we've been able to build into the questions that we've asked so that we can have some direct comparisons. Mm. John?
What was the sample size?
We will get to that. We will get to that.
And with the what we plan to do is there'll be... No, I guess you'll be talking about specific reports later. The plan is to have the main report come out in sort of early March. And that'll be hopefully followed up by specific reports. So there's so much stuff in education in here that, you know, we can use in really interesting ways. So, you know, we can come out with specific reports that are useful for different purposes later on after the main report. So continue to go through. State representation was kind of what you'd expect to some degree. New South Wales and Victoria were right up there. Queensland did extremely well. And on the right-hand side, you'll see I've actually compared the state representation of our community and the state representation of the country. And who's here from Canberra? ACT is so overrepresented, it's fantastic.
That's basically Auslabs right there.
So Canberra, well, ACT is, there is a little bit more to the ACT than Canberra, but not much. So the ACT is very overrepresented in terms of the general population. South Australia is overrepresented and Tasmania is overrepresented. So that was really, really great to see. So who's from South Australia? You guys also rock, thank you. okay.
I totally understand the Tasmanian and Canberra kind of point of view of there's nothing else to do, but South Australia, aren't you all just getting drunk in the wineries and stuff? Like, surely that would... Never mind, go on.
Jeff's favourite wine comes from South Australia, so yeah. What I tried to do, we asked the question, when did you get involved in the open source community? And this was really interesting. So then I broke it down to the different states. I was trying to find different patterns, or we were trying to find different patterns. And we actually found that this almost correlates to where the different Linux ConfAUs have been. So this is sort of showing that when Linux ConfAU goes to a particular place, then the amount of people getting involved in the community from that state grow, which is what you'd kind of expect. What we're going to do with the next one, we're planning on running these on a semi-regular basis, either yearly or every 2 years, to try and get trends over time. And next time we won't say the big chunks of time, we'll get the actual year people got involved so we can do this more specifically. But there's a couple of anomalies here that are really weird. Victoria, as you can see, just spikes up enormously, like 16 years ago for some reason. And we also have a spike in South Australia in the 11 to 15 years ago that seems quite strange as well. But I was told a couple of days ago that that might be because they were doing these enormous install fests and events about 12 or 13 years ago. So that had an impact apparently. But so we're looking for different events that may have had an impact here. But
and it's fascinating looking at this sort of stuff because it suits your intuitions of what's going on in your own community. Like, I look at the New South Wales graph here and it makes total sense to me, knowing how Slug works and knowing at different points in time that people got involved in the community and so that the spikes of students coming into the Slug community and things like that. So it's certainly from our point of view looking at the New South Wales graph, it makes a lot of sense. So hopefully some of you from various different logs and different states are looking at this and seeing that it makes a lot of sense.
And pretty much, stop pressing the buttons. And pretty much everyone's getting an increasing amount of new people getting involved in the community, apart from South Australia. What's going on with you guys? okay, so community building efforts have real impact and will be, with certainly the next one, getting a lot better data on that to be able to demonstrate that. But it already is shown from where LCA has moved around and the growth in the different states. So, date of birth. This is fascinating. First of all, it's worth pointing out that the median age for some reason, the ABS tends to work on medians rather than averages. Now, my background's not in statistics, but through this and a few other things, I found that I'm a complete stat nerd. So I've been enjoying this a lot, but our median age is 30, and the national median age is 37. So that was quite interesting as well. The most represented age here is 1982. Who's from 1982 here? Come and get a lolly.
Lollies for the youngsters.
Lollies for the youngsters, no. But it's really interesting to try and correlate why there were different spikes. Is anyone here born in 1956? Okay. What?
Or thereabouts.
it's what we wanted to try and do with this is have a little bit of fun and try and understand what got people into open source from the different major spikes. Because there's a major spike in 1956, 1968, and then it sort of, you know, grows a fair bit. 1979, there's a massive spike, 1981, 82. So how did you get involved in open source? That's okay, so he's saying that he got involved in some stuff in the early 80s, then there wasn't much for years, and then started getting involved in some other stuff, which is really interesting because there's a spike, and then it goes down, and then it goes back up again. What we'll be doing is following this as time goes by and trying to build in different, and correlating this with when people got involved, which you'll see in just a little while, and trying to find the different events that have had massive impact in getting new people involved and at different ages.
A lot of this reflects, you know, the children of Unix, and then the children of the Korn, or the children of the kernel, the Linux kernel, and all that sort of stuff. And definitely, people in our age group, there's a huge spike around there, and a lot of that has to do with the rise of Linux. Linux becoming useful, universities using Linux a lot. And you know, certainly for us, things like LinuxConf AU 2001, when there was a huge boost to the community in New South Wales, where we managed to get a whole bunch of the universities, the programming clubs and things like that, really interested in the community and participating there. And I think that pretty much happened around the country, the rise of Linux in universities and stuff.
This slide would look a little bit better if the zeros were in there.
If what, sorry?
1945, 1947.
Yeah. Oh. So the zeros are missing.
So it distorts the picture.
Yes.
Yeah, 1994,
95. Oh, right, yeah. Sorry, yeah. I'll fix that. Thank you.
Okay. Nice bug, thanks.
Okay, so another, everyone talks about, we're all obviously single in our parents' basements and hacking and... when actually, in truth, less than half of the community were single. It was 55% were in a couple, and of that, well, not of that, but in total, 31% also had children. So, I'm still getting the Australian norms for that. They're really weird to try and understand those. But yeah, I'm going to have those comparisons in the report that comes out. Sorry?
That'd be good to see with age as well. You
know, like
yes.
You're a person who was born in 1996.
Please be able to write down notes.
Doesn't have children.
I'm just saying.
We've got we've got all of those.
Oh, it's so. Being recorded. We don't need to take notes. That's fine. Okay, thank you. employment status. So most of us are full-time, 65% full-time, and you go right down to unemployed or not working was 10%. We didn't ask in this question about education status because obviously there's a lot of people working and studying. So we split those out. And interestingly, when we actually took out the people who are working in some capacity and the people who are in full-time study, not part-time or casual study, that I believe is what makes up the unemployment rate, and I'm checking that with the ABS at the moment. But and if that is the case, then our unemployment rate is actually lower than the national average, which is kind of cool as well. But most of us are working. We're mostly working in business. Can you make some water? We're mostly working in IT companies, business services, property services, which you'd expect, then education. Communication. I was surprised to see government quite so high because there are certainly a lot of people in government working with open source, but people that actually identify themselves as being part of our community is a lot higher than I expected, or than we expected, but still that's quite good. Into the different type of jobs, you'd expect that, I mean, a lot of us are technical. Software engineers were right up there, and most people certainly identified themselves as being in some sort of IT role, as you'd expect. But there were quite a few people that had non-IT roles. As you can see, it was the second highest amount.
We did this one as a bar graph rather than a pie chart because the pie chart looked like complete crap. But we'll be sort of combining them and making it a little bit more illustrative for the report.
Pie charts are real.
Some would say stats are evil, but eh. Okay, so we actually had to look at some things in particular with women. Women were in these were the only jobs actually that women selected. So web developer, other jobs, software engineer or non-ICT role. The other mainly comprised of some sort of training, trainers or teachers, and doing open source training. But so that was fairly good. So there were a couple of key points, and I didn't want to put them all up, but we had lower unemployment. We had more contractors and less full-time. We had a much higher representation than Flosspolls, which I'll get into in just a second. But Flosspolls is the study that's always being spoken about as, you know, how many women are in free software. But actually, it was a European-centric and actually really French-centric study. And I'll chat about that in just a second. But one of the core things that I was actually surprised at is that women were paid less, even when looked at a job-for-job comparison. And that was, I think that's just a matter of education and people not knowing what they're worth in the market, but that certainly
needs looking into. People thought that was a myth, that women are paid less, but yeah, it's not at all.
I did. People ask if I'm paid less than Jeff, and I say, well, I write out the checks, so. In fact, someone said, how many people are in your workplace? And I said, 50%. Anyway. So there were 7% women, which is lower than what I'd hoped, but still, it was very good. Flosspolls puts it at about 1.5 or 2% women, and considering Australia has a fairly low representation of women in ICT generally, I think that having 7% makes the rest of the world, makes Flosspolls, shows that Flosspolls is probably misrepresentative of the rest of the world, because we do have less women than a lot of the other countries, and we only have 7%. So I think that things are not great, but they're not nearly as dire as a lot of people are concerned about. Are you paid to work on free software? 57% said never, so a lot of these people are just doing it for fun or in their spare time. Someone actually told me the story of someone who is an Apache hacker, and he actually does his Apache hacking. He's a pilot by trade. So when he's doing the flights from, you know, Sydney to London, he sits there hacking on Apache in the plane. It's so cool. So anyway, but...
Shitty network access, though.
But I mean, it just shows that there's so many people in our community from such diverse areas that just love working on free software, and that's so cool.
Now, the good thing about this one is that this reflects the community beyond LCA. Often enough, we ask questions at LCA about, you know, how many people are full-time employed and things like that. This one represents, you know, beyond LCA because it was an online survey. But LCA has generally had about two-thirds professional open source folks, people who are paid to work on open source full time. So how many full time open source folks are here in the room at the moment? That's not quite two thirds.
Can you clarify the question? You're paid to consult on open source, but you're not paid to contribute to open source.
No, the question wasn't paid to contribute to open source. It was paid to do work relating to open source.
Open source technologies and communities. Yeah. So, I mean, it took quite a while to get the right questions for this sort of stuff, because there are a lot of people working in the open source world that aren't actually, you know, coding and stuff like that. So we wanted to make sure that was properly represented, that you were working on stuff that was related to open source industry, open source communities, and we're being paid for it.
But I guess the good thing here, one of the good things here, is that there is actually 10% of us being paid full-time to work on open source, and a good 24% being paid at least sometimes to work on free software. In terms of the salaries, it spikes up around 76 to 100K, which is kind of nice. Women, unfortunately, spiked at 46 to 60K, which wasn't cool. Now, this is only the people working full-time. There are more statistics that come out, and this doesn't include the people who are paid to work full-time on just open source software, because I've included them in here, and they tend to earn a lot more. When you actually looked at the average salary, the people who were working on free software full-time were earning more than the average for the general community, so that was kind of interesting. There was only one woman working full-time on free software, but oh well, and it wasn't me. So, Okay, so our salary is almost three times the national median in terms of the general community. That's cool. That is a really good message to take out to the education sector and say, hey, if you want to get into a great, well-paying industry that's really fun and all these other reasons, come in and work in specifically in open source.
And it suggests that people who participate in the open source community have better skills, are more likely to get better jobs, more likely to have higher pay.
So getting more people involved is not necessarily going to change those people's salaries.
No. I mean, it doesn't even say that working in open source is necessarily the way to go, but it does indicate, as Jeff just said, that getting those skills can help you.
Is that, please clarify, is that the three times national median for a job to job?
No. No, that was the general population versus the open source community, which makes sense because we're higher skilled than the general population at large, but it's still an interesting stat.
Yeah, and at this point, we're comparing the whole of the community, which has jobs in all kinds of different things, with the whole of the population, which has jobs in all kinds of things.
But most of the jobs in the community must be in ICT
units. Yes.
Yes, yes,
yes.
And then the comparison.
Oh, okay. And then the people working full-time open source jobs earned more. Yep.
Well, did you compare that to the computer industry in general?
Yes, and that statistic will be coming out soon. we are comparing against... The Australian Bureau of Statistics actually did a thing called the ICT Satellite study, which was they took all of the data they have and condensed just the ICT relevant statistics. And so we'll be comparing against that as well as against the broader population.
But you're confident enough now to say that open source pays more?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay, we asked people where they got their skills, and we asked them to rank. And so I've only taken the first three ranks. If anyone can think of a better way to represent this data, please tell me. But you can see that in terms of the top ranking where people learnt their open source skills, it's self-taught, is way up there. You can see that it sort of goes down to particular software projects or universities, mailing lists, and you can see that high school is just not up there, really. And technical colleges and such. So what we did was we then said, these are the wrong way around. So most people aren't studying, but there is a full-time study is 16% are doing full-time study. And you'll notice that there's a overlap there. So the people working full-time must be, a percentage of them must be working. And
studying.
Sorry, must be. No, must be working and studying. Yeah. Universities attended. So we thought we'd have a bit of fun with this one. We asked what universities people went to. Now, just to be clear, some people went to multiple universities and we counted all instances. So these are all the universities that people attended at some point. Otherwise, we'd be making qualitative judgments and that wouldn't be cool. Most people went to some university internationally, the most ranked, highest ranked was international universities anywhere in the world.
Hold on, don't change the line. But for the purposes of today, we're not going to compete against the international universities. We're going to try and pick and choose which is the best university, most popular university amongst the open source community. So, who reckons they know the answer?
ANU.
There's another one? UNSW. I must admit, that's what I thought. All of my smart open source friends went to UNSW. QUT?
QUT?
Melbourne?
Melbourne? UWA?
Good luck. In fact, the answer is...
Okay, so the top one
QUT.
Was...
Sorry, I've got my Wiimote behind my back here.
Are you going to click or am I going to click? Let's get this straight.
We can both click in time. So QUT, nice one, Queenslanders. Everyone's going to guess University of Sydney because they've already seen it. That one really surprised me because it's a shitty course compared to UNSW. Man, what the crap.
But
I suppose it's because, you know, all of the University of Sydney arts students go on to want real jobs and so they... I'm a University of Sydney arts student. Yes. Yes.
I think we'll do a comparison with the salary. But yeah, I think next time we'll actually ask which degree did you do and make sure that we get that clear as well.
Yeah. We've left most of the correlation and comparison stuff for the report. We've done most of the just the basic graphs for this presentation.
Does this change over time? So, in other words, the older cohorts probably only went to
That's an interesting question.
QIT.
Yeah.
And the younger people would may come from other universities.
That would be an awesome comparison to see which universities are getting better.
Yep. Yeah.
So okay, then we've got ANU.
So ANU is in the top three, Melbourne, Queensland. Now, the interesting thing here is that Queensland actually has two in the top four. So that's awesome. That's really, really cool. Then we go down to a whole bunch more, and we may as well just put the rest out there.
There's the UWA Leon.
It's in the top 10. That's pretty good. Yeah. You can all turn your heads and go, that's where I went.
They all look like owls.
It worked. No. But it was interesting to see where people went, and we'll definitely follow up with doing those comparisons with different stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Definitely.
Moving on.
Are you clicking? Okay. Now, this is my favorite graph of all. It looks totally boring to start, but we asked people how long they've been employed in ICT, so the people who were employed in ICT. We asked people how many years they've been paid to work in any capacity with open source, and we asked people how many years they've been involved in the open source community. Does anyone want to see if they can pick the thing that made me so excited about this?
Why is this slide rad?
Yes, this is exactly
almost.
No, it's
very close.
So you'll notice that the green one, in like 16, oh, I'm going to go over here. So 16 to 20 years, the years involved, the people that got involved, that number almost directly matches the next chunks, the next 5 years worth of people that started to get paid to work on open source software. And then that one, the number of people getting involved, you know, almost matched the people getting paid, and then again. So we can actually sort of say, well, getting involved in open source software will help you get paid to get to work with open source software, which is kind of cool. And it also gives us a way to sort of look at the fact that it's going continually up, and that the people that were paid to work in ICT over 20 years ago, that went down and then back up, and it's growing nowhere near as fast as the amount of people that are starting to get paid in open source software, or people are starting to get involved in open source software. So that was really cool.
We've been trying to come up with the right phrase to use at the, we're gonna do like an official launch and invite media folks along, government folks along, stuff like that. And the one I'm working with at the moment is dorking around on the internet with your friends is a career path. I think that one really sells the opportunity that that we have here. Yes, that's right.
So start in high school. Perfect. Okay, open source skills overview. This is going to lead into some fun stuff, but we asked people what areas they had skills in. So the top ones are what you'd expect, you know, web technologies, software development, desktop, and followed by platforms, infrastructure, going all the way down. Obviously, enterprise applications are going to be lower because in terms of what people like to do in their spare time, you know, maybe not working on business intelligence is the thing.
Hooray! Business intelligence!
Yeah, not quite that kind of fun. So what we've done is taken...
Actually, can I just pipe in for a minute? For those of you who did the survey, who got to that section and kind of went, huh? Some of the weirdnesses about those categories are actually related to some other... surveys that we wanted to compare against, and so we kind of had to do a one-to-one. So there's some weird things in the survey that kind of seem a little bit odd to our community, but yes, they'll be remapped and fixed the next time we do it.
Anyone want to see if they can pick the winning combination? Going from left to right. On the right, the lists that are there are the lists that are actually on there.
Maybe we'll just let them get a trifecta.
What?
What was that? Ubuntu, Debian, Fedora? Was that the... Everyone agree with that?
Debian, Fedora, Ubuntu?
Fedora, Ubuntu, Debian? Debian, Fedora, Ubuntu was another guess? Someone up the back said Red Hat has to be in there somewhere.
Oh, from the right. Someone's gone for the open Solaris wooden spoon. Okay, we're going to jump in. So, this is what we found. From the left, Ubuntu, Fedora, RHEL, SUSE, Open Solaris, Debian. Now, we have something to say. Actually, before we get into the something to say.
Now, you may notice that there's something strange about the order of Debian and possibly its relationship with Open Solaris.
Next.
That's largely my fault. Debian wasn't actually in the list of distros in the survey. So, and that has nothing to do with, say, previous employer relationships or anything like that. It was just a spectacular cock-up on my part. And
we did get people to test it. None of them picked it up either. And some of them complained afterwards. And we're like, you tested it.
We had Debian.
Sorry?
This is a result of write-ins. So
Debian, the only two write-ins out of the entire thing, it's because so many people picked it in the other, and there were a lot of abusive comments.
WTF Debian ?? Was remarkably common in the data. It's gone.
This one was actually more servers, so this was about platforms for servers. We'll get to desktops in a second.
We often use Red Hat or Ubuntu or things for desktop, but we
find
that servers
Debian
and
Well,
well, I think this is why RHEL featured so heavily in this one.
Yeah.
Are you going to test for statistical significance in the final?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And the other thing is that this will also be compared against the industry one as well, because platforms, operating systems the companies are choosing to support doesn't necessarily match exactly with what we're all choosing to use for fun or for development. Peter, did you have a comment?
Oh, just wondering whether the BSD folks didn't think they did open source.
No, BSD wasn't in the list. Now you can blame me if you like, but there were a couple of people that included it, but it wasn't enough to actually make a statistical blip.
There was one BSD entry in the list.
There was one BSD entry in the list out of the lot. And the idea also was that, I mean, you've got to remember this is the first time we ran it, so the ones that came up and did actually get, you know, enough to get statistics, we can actually include in the next list. So this is, we're looking at making this an ongoing project, which is continually improving depending on the different technologies that are coming up and being heavily used.
And I think we'll apologize in the final report about the statistical insignificance of the Debian cock-up.
Yeah, we'll make that clear.
Insignificance or significance.
So our major lesson there is sorry, Debian. It's very rare you hear an apology and Debian in the same sentence, so... Okay, the desktop. And we've got two things here. On the left-hand side, the six lines on the left-hand side are operating systems, and the two on the right-hand side are GNOME or KDE. So anyone want to throw in what they reckon? How many people here think GNOME will be the top one on the right-hand side? How many people here think KDE? Okay, cool. Anyone want to take a guess on the top? Who thinks that...
Did you remember to put Debian in this one?
No.
Sorry.
Okay, who wants to guess from the left? Ubuntu? Fedora? RHEL? So this is what people are using on the desktops, okay? Mandriva? Yep. Mandriva's not in my list.
Seriously, UWA, Mandriva? You are a statistical outlier. All the way out in Perth.
If I dropped one up on the university chart, surely Mandriva can wind up on the distro chart.
Sorry? Nobix didn't make a blip either, sorry.
Minor hint, we actually have the list of them up on the screen there. But
yeah, don't choose other ones. All right, I'm going to show you. So when Ubuntu, Fedora, RHEL, SUSE, Open Solaris, Debian, and then GNOME KDE. So GNOME was higher than KDE. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to move on. Web. So development tools. How many people here do web development of any sort? Okay, so do you all feel like you can pick it? Who do you reckon is going to be highest? PHP, JBoss? PHP's not there. JBoss?
So this is another one of the weird things about the studies that we had to compare against. Soap is a development tool?
Yeah, this one's actually my fault, sorry.
Soap developers are tools, but I don't know about soap being a development tool. Rest forever.
Sorry?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my fault. Help us fix it for the next one. Yeah, I'm just going to show it and we'll move on. So Eclipse was actually the highest out of those, which is interesting. Followed by Tomcat, Soap, Ruby on Rails, and JBoss.
So there's some of these that, as a result of the comparative studies, we're not going to make a huge big deal about, but we thought this would be funny, at least for the soap joke, at the very least. But
it was interesting because when you looked at something like Java, the people in the community using Java was much statistically lower than the people in business supporting it, which makes sense. There were, you know, some really interesting comparisons there, which will all be available in the report coming out soon.
No one wants to write Java at home, that's why.
This was far closer than I thought it would be. I did not expect it to be quite this close. So the second, third, and fourth bars from the left are all the same length, same height, and then the fifth bar is slightly lower, just to be clear. Who wants to guess what number one is? PHP? Java C? See, there's already a lot of... Sorry?
The human statistical outlier.
Okay, who wants to guess what the lowest one is? C.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying Ruby, actually. But
Ruby?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Ruby was the lowest and C was the highest, followed by C++. C++, Python, and PHP were all on par. And this is community, right? So it's not necessarily reflective of industry, but that's an interesting comparison too.
And it should be noted that these were the answers for the people who chose software development languages as one of their areas of skills. Mm. So this is not out of the total of the people who responded. So I wouldn't want you to think that the majority of the people who responded were C hackers, because that's not entirely representative of who responded.
Scott?
A good statistic would be to see where they fit into different job skills as well.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
No, we'll definitely do that. The suggestion was that we compare the different skills people have with different jobs that they have and see, you know, what sysadmins have versus software engineers versus web developers. So
and some of the stuff that's obvious to us that we intuit just through, you know, participation in the community is really important to communicate to the wider world. So we're very committed to doing that.
Sorry? A graph landscape.
Oh, bars rather than columns, right.
Right, okay. I'm going to pass back over.
Okie dokie.
Okay.
So that's our sneak peek of the census. We're going to be doing the census report launch in March, most likely in Sydney, sorry folks. And that will be...
Possibly Canberra.
That will be inclusive of all of the industry and community analysis and have a lot more of the compare and contrast and correlation stuff, which will be fascinating. And of course, our main aim is to make sure that this basically is carpet bombed through business, government, everywhere we possibly can. There'll be a sexy printed edition for your boss. We'll have a whole bunch of copies of that. The people who participated will be sent a copy, and we'll have lots to hand out at the launch event. And of course, you can give that to your customers as well. We want to make this as useful as possible to the industry and the community to get the word out, to get the information out.
With the printed version, we want to actually make it something beautiful, something people actually love to read, something that has, you know, really nice pictures. It'll have some profiles of, you know, awesome people like Tridge from the community. It'll probably have some profiles of high-profile case studies of people using open source in their businesses and such. And we're trying to make it not so that it'll be a boring, you know, paper stats and just figures, but something that people will actually pick up and go, wow, this is really cool, and it it will show off just how amazing and professional our community is, not only through the data that it contains, but through the presentation that we give it.
And it will also be freely redistributable. So we're going to publish a PDF. You're going to be able to copy it, grab it, whatever. If you don't get a hard copy, you can pass that around. Sorry? It'll be available from our website. So when it launches, you'll hear all of the news about it.
Mind you, being freely redistributable means it'll probably be available from a lot of places fairly quickly after it's released. But census.warpartners.com.au is where to go to get information about it, and that's where it'll be published.
Not sure yet. We'll figure that out.
It'll be Creative Commons or something.
But yeah, I mean, Creative Commons, something or other.
What about the data?
So the data is an interesting question. What we've endeavoured to do here is to do something as useful as we can possibly do for the industry and community, but also make it sustainable. So that's why we did it as a commercial project, have it fully sponsored, do it 100% professional. Ultimately, we'd love to be able to push the data out there so that people can muck around with it and find some cool stuff. And
just the anonymized data.
Yes, and an important point, the only data that we'll ever get out there is anonymized data. Our partners will receive the data as well, but they're also only getting anonymized data, except for the people who check the box that says, yes, let IBM contact me or whatever like that. So we want to figure out how to do that, but in the meantime, basically it's the report that's going to come out that we think is going to be the most useful with all of the analysis and stuff like that, and then we'll figure out a model for the data over time. And we're going to be doing additional analysis and reports over the year as well, so stuff that we can't fill in the initial report we're going to be doing throughout the year, particularly in response to topical issues. So, when people start talking about professionalism or skills or education issues and things like that in either the business world or in government or things, we'll be doing reports to sort of answer that and assist the community with real numbers to rebut some of those perceptions and things.
So in terms of the opportunities, Jeff's gone through a couple, but there's some really great opportunities here to take this data to government in particular. I'm going to be making sure that there's a copy of this on the desk of every minister that we can get on the desk of and their advisors, and make sure that it gets out to the education sector. We'll probably follow this up with a special report just for education, because once you compare what the industry is looking for, and I mean, we asked the industry participants, how many people they wanted to employ, what skills they looked for, what they had most difficulty employing, and all those kinds of things, and that correlates very interestingly with what the community is doing and where it's getting its skills. So we'll be able to go to the education sector and say, please, for the love of God, teach some free software. Because the industry needs it, and the community can't get its skills from any formal education, well, many formal education places at the moment. So there's opportunities for to help improve education, to get improve education in government, education in business, and we'll be following the launch, we'll be making sure that it gets reported in business rags, not just tech rags as well. So going to making sure that the information gets out to business decision makers, government decision makers, as well as people in IT.
It's been fun to have support to do, high wire stuff like this that, normally we would not have the opportunity to do. So it's been great to have the sponsorship to do it. And at this point, one of the things we did is we had a competition for all the people who did the community side of the census to win some awesome Linux-powered handheld gaming devices, the GP2X. And of course, gaming on Linux is so awesome that you can play Space Invaders. Woo! Actually, they come with heaps more than that. They've got like music players and all this kind of stuff. So, Pierre, have you got the boxes?
But I don't know how many of those people are here. But we'll find out.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So we did a random selection about half an hour ago after asking Anthony Baxter, how do we do a quick random number thing in Python? He's like, import random. So they might not all be here, but we have to select amongst all of the people who responded rather than the people who are here at LCA. So the first winner, Simon Rumble.
I don't think he's here.
Okay. Sarah Hobbs. I don't think she's here. Jeremy Fitzharding. I don't think he's here.
I don't know who he is.
Brad Thompson. And we're going for the clean sweep. Billy Kwong. Hooray! So exciting. Billy, Billy was actually the first person to sign up for the community census, so he gets a special prize. Questions?
Lots of questions. One.
Do you plan, I missed the pre-reviewing of talk in terms of external review of the survey design and the way the results being presented to make sure I'm not saying outrageous things?
Mm-hmm. The question was about external review of the process methodology, how we're doing the census. One of the reasons we partnered up with NICTA is to actually leverage their... I just used the word leverage in a free software course. Sorry, I apologise. To work with their professional researchers. And so we worked with their... What's that word?
Psychometrician.
We worked with their psychometricians. This is a whole new word for me, a whole new world. And they actually looked at the design. They looked at how it would be delivered. They tested it. And they're also working with us to actually make sure that the way that we analyze it is correct. So we wanted to make sure that we aligned ourselves with a top research, world-recognized research organization to A, make sure it was done really well, but B, to circumvent the inevitable, oh my God, that's just done by a bunch of, yeah, anyway.
We also had a lot of help from Agamo, Invest Australia, Takeda, on, you know, figuring out what they wanted to know about and things like that. So that was really useful.
You're going to talk about sample size.
Sample size, yes. So we called this the open source census because we're bold and we wanted to aim high. Certainly what we've got is a sample of the open source community, but we think it's actually a really good sample. LA has about 1,400 members. And I don't actually know what the percentage of local versus international members that is at the moment, but we'll figure out what that is. We had 327 community.
Oh, there were more than that, but 327 was the number after you took out the journalists that registered just to get access to the questions early. We know who you are, and no, I won't say that. There were registrations
from the Microsoft people.
Yeah.
So once you took out you'd be surprised the number of proprietary companies who were very interested in seeing what we were doing.
Yeah. No, they didn't hide it. But once you took out the incomplete ones or the bong ones or whatever, and once we, 327 after you took all that stuff out.
So while we, and we'll be including some stuff in the report about why we think this is a reasonable, it is self-selected, but it is a reasonable sample of the community and what it indicates in terms of the true size of the community. But based on that, we think it's a good sample. It is indicative, despite it only being 327, it's certainly more than what the actual Australian census sample sizes compared to the full population is. So that's actually really good. Yes.
Mm. And we've got more than 5%, I think.
Not a huge amount. We actually we want to sit down with NICTA and go through some of their. They've got various models that they work through to deal with those sorts of situations. So I mean, there's some things that we've just kind of thrown around as like ideas of sort of what's happened with that and stuff like.
Also, how many were Geminis?
Sorry.
How people are Geminis? Oh, right, okay. we're not building a dating service on top of the community data. It's an interesting business model, but not quite one that we were going for. There was a question over here. No?
Yep.
Statistics for universities and universities and open source. Mm.
Yeah, what I actually want to do is do that in a follow-up education-specific brief because some of the, like QUT has some great open source stuff. I mean, I believe they've got dual boot machines. They've got Linux and Windows on them machines for the labs and stuff, and they've got a bunch of cool stuff. But we need to do all that, but I don't think it'll be in the main report. So
we want to do some qualitative stuff there as well. So we want to interview people who've been to those universities and talk to the various professors and people who've done the curriculum and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, that's very much sort of down the track. We'll do another report specifically about those things.
One of the things I hope this does is, we hope that it does, is the universities that are already doing some open source stuff, it will reinforce what they're doing or at least encourage what they're doing. And the ones that aren't doing it, it will hopefully encourage them to, you need to compete. So that should be good.
Be awesome if they all start fighting for, you know, the best open source university in Australia. That's QUT.
We actually did. We asked people if they went to TAFE, which TAFE they went to, and most TAFEs only got sort of one or two counts, and so it's not enough to make really good assumptions yet, but New South Wales had the most amount of people who got their open source skills from TAFE. But yeah, we did ask that question, and we left it open for people to name which TAFEs they went to.
Are we getting them?